Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A lost snowboarder is rescued on Mount Hood. Wisconsin public employees continue to protest budget cuts. And Congressman David Wu may be crazy.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, February 21st, 2011. A snowboarder lost on Mount Hood since Sunday has been found and airlifted to safety. Clackamas County search and rescue crews say the 26-year-old man from North Carolina recently told them he could hear a helicopter overhead on the mountain's west side. More than 15 people were looking for the man, who hasn't been identified. Earlier today, Lieutenant Jim Strovink, the sheriff's office spokesman, said they believe the missing snowboarder was somewhere in the Paradise Park area of Mount Hood, which lines the Zigzag Canyon. He said the area on a good day in summer is considered very difficult. Strovink said the snowboarder was able to use his cell phone to tell rescuers he decided to climb Mount Hood while carrying his snowboard. During the descent, he became disoriented in the heavy snow.
You know, snowboarders normally seem like such a rational, level-headed, forward-thinking group of folks. Also, just for no readily apparent reason, every time you say lost snowboarder, I keep hearing Great Space Coaster in my head. I don't really know why.
I have no idea why either.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, February 21st, 2011. Thank you for coming by. If you want to get this program later on the day, you can do so at iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. It's also available on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Coming up later on this hour, we got your entertainment news, also science on the march. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Distracted
by a thing?
I was distracted by a thing. There's so many things, and they're easily distracting me. Wisconsin public employees are expected to continue their protest in the state capitol today. It's the seventh straight day of protest against a proposed budget by Governor Scott Walker that would ratchet up contributions to pensions while wiping out collective bargaining for public employees. Union leaders have announced they will concede to Governor Walker's demands for an 8% pay cut, but stand firm against what they call his union-busting measures. Madison teachers will be among those continuing to pack the Capitol in protest, though they've announced they will return to classrooms tomorrow. Meanwhile, state Senate Democrats remain hidden in a secret location to prevent the bill from going to a vote.
A secret location?
Yes. They're hiding in a secret location so they don't have to vote.
Okay. That's great.
That's the
spine that Democrats are known for, by the way. In case anybody in the future ever wonders why Democrats can't seem to win anything, and when they do win something, why they can't seem to hold on to it. In case anybody ever takes issue with me calling Democrats largely just a group of
I mean, to say ineffectual almost does disservice to the word itself. The fact that they are, in fact, that they are hiding.
They're hiding.
It's not that just that they can't be tracked down at the moment, or like maybe their cell phone has gone dead, or I don't know, they're just in an area where they're getting shoddy reception and they're between two different buses and they're waiting for a transfer to get back to the Capitol. They are, in fact, seeking refuge.
Yes, because if someone could find them, they would be forced to go to work, at which point they would have to vote.
Okay.
So they're hiding.
They've gone to ground, as they say.
They're hunkered down, as our local law enforcement likes to say.
Strictly and solely for the purpose of avoiding their job.
Right.
Okay.
Opponents of the Wisconsin budget bill have taken over the state capitol rotunda in protest of the governor's plans.
Stay the course. This is about getting to Friday. Stay here. Hold this floor.
Protesters are upset the governor's budget bill would increase the cost of benefits to public employees and curb their collective bargaining rights.
How upset can you really be if you had time to stop by the local music emporium and pick up some percussion instruments on the way to the...
I have a feeling there are people there, much like in Portland, there are probably people there who really don't care so much about the issue at hand. They just want an opportunity to drum in public.
They just see the protest sign lights up the sky and...
Yeah. There's a whole section with, like, a drum circle and some guys playing hacky sack.
Quick, to the music closet! All right. I'm sorry, what am I doing here?
You're playing Wisconsin 2. Which apparently is more drumming.
Well, there's never enough drumming. I don't know that this really sells the seriousness of the issue or the conflict. This might undercut any claims that it's really a life-or-death issue going on out there. You don't really think of Wisconsinites as being angry people. You just think of them just sort of sitting around and being kind of spongy and drunk most of the time.
Yeah, but this is, I don't know, in a way this is a little bit of a test case because the governor of Wisconsin is a Republican and he is one of the Republicans who came out and said, like, from the get-go, it's like, well, if we get into office, we're going to just shut down those unions because we hate unions. And if we can cripple the unions, then they won't support the Democrats in the next presidential election.
Well, hey, guess what? The Republicans seem to be the ones going to work. So
yeah.
I guess when the Democrats decide that they want to show up for something, then they can complain. As long as you stay home.
They're not home. They're hiding.
And this isn't...
There's a secret location.
That's right. We don't even know that. If they were home, I guess they'd be easier to find. And this isn't one of those, like, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain things. Because that's also not true. But this is, like, they've actually fought and literally campaigned for the job of being in office, and now we're just sort of opting to be unfindable when the rubber meets the road. Well done, Democrats.
And I'm guessing, there's some plan that if they don't have to vote right away, someone on the other side of the aisle will change their mind.
That's how Republicans always work.
But,
if you just leave them to their own devices, they see reason eventually.
I mean, it's like they can't hide forever. They're going to have to vote on this eventually.
They're Democrats. They can hide forever.
They've got to come out to, like, you know, have sex with an intern or something eventually, like the groundhog.
So what is it? So the teachers are just... Is this like where the teachers are just sort of marching around and presumably drumming in a circle or something? Are they just killing time until the Democrats show up to save them?
More or less,
themselves?
I think it's just a matter of...
I don't want to dash anybody's hopes, but...
The public showing outrage. These people showing outrage over what's being done to them. I mean...
Who's outraged about what?
Well, basically they're trying to... The Republicans are essentially trying to break the union of the public employees the public employees have pretty much agreed to take less of an increase, you know, in some health care stuff. They already actually pay less for their share of health care than is the national average. The national average of private sector employees is something like 20%. People pay 20% of their own insurance, and they only pay, like, you know, 9%.
Also,
the public
employees have health care.
And they have health care. And so Walker wants to bump that up to 12%, that they have to copay 12%. But he also wants to take away their collective bargaining rights, which basically just, you know, essentially destroys the union. So, you know, that's what that's about.
Collective bargaining sounds a lot like socialism, Don.
Well, yes. You know, and it allows people to actually, you know, stand up against the government and their employers and say, no, we demand better stuff.
What?
So we can't have that.
It seems... Well,
That's not the American way.
You know, you didn't need a union to get this job done. You did it on your own. You did it through your own skills, your own hard work, your own talent and acumen.
Yes. And do I have health insurance?
No.
Is there any kind of guideline as to what hours I have to work?
Let's be real clear about something. Even if there were five of you, you wouldn't get health insurance. Let's have no illusion. The idea that a union is going to somehow be able to get those things for you, that's just not true, Don.
Well,
I'll prove that if I have to, by the way. I don't want to do that. I don't want to break the alliance. But if it must be done to make the point.
Cheryl and I are going to have some secret meetings, secret backroom meetings.
See, Cheryl, though, is a union unto herself. See, that's the whole... That sort of proves the point right there. Let me just... anybody who thinks that a union...
Oh, wait a minute. I'm a co-owner of this business. I am the man.
That's what I'm saying.
Ah, crap.
I didn't want to underscore that point too strongly in front of everybody. Anybody who thinks that a union really is the answer to all of your problems should reflect on the fact that for about half the time that I was employed at radio stations, terrestrial broadcast outlets here in Portland, I was, in fact, a member of a union. Fat lot of friggin' good it did me. So I'm just saying that I don't know that that's the panacea that it is sometimes positioned as being.
Well, in a related story...
We have great drumming, though.
In an act of intercontinental solidarity, an Egyptian ordered a pizza for the Wisconsin protesters. The call from Africa is just one of many streaming into Madison, Wisconsin pizza parlor Ian's from around the world. So far, people from 12 countries and 38 states have called looking to get pizza to the Wisconsin protesters clustered in the Capitol. On Saturday, Ian's distributed more than 1,000 free slices of pizza and sent 300 tall pizzas to the Capitol to feed the protesters. The trend continued on Sunday as staff members fielded calls from as far away as Turkey, Korea, Finland, China, and Australia. This began when a mother of a University of Wisconsin student called in offering to donate $200 to feed the people occupying the Capitol. The pizza chain's postings on Twitter and Facebook led to so many donations they had to shut down on Saturday night.
Let me just go back on this, the union busting thing for a second, because that's a phrase that I hear sometimes, and I never really know what it means, because it seems when people say union busting, they're referring to a situation which the union goes, well, we want it, and the guy in charge goes, well, no, and they go, well... But we're going to drum and march. And the guy says, well, fine, have at it, but you can't have it. I'm not going to give it to you. But we want it, but you can't have it.
Well, in this case, it's a matter of literally they're trying to weaken the union to the point where they don't.
Well, just by saying no.
Well, no, by removing, by basically taking away their right to collective bargaining.
Well, I don't think it's that. I think it's saying, like, go to work or don't go to work, but if you don't, we're going to fire you. I mean, that's not really union busting. That's just firing a guy who's not going to work.
I think it might be a little bit more complicated than that.
I'm not saying that there couldn't be nuance illustrated for me, but I'm saying that's because they're not allowed to go on strike. Like, they signed an agreement saying that they would go to work. If you opt not to go to work after saying you will, the guy gets to fire you. That's just sort of the way that it goes. That's like if I go buy a TV and then just stop paying on it, saying the guy can't come and take it away from me because he's busting my right to entertainment. I agreed to pay for the TV. I don't pay for the TV, I don't get to keep it.
Okay.
I'm not trying to be a jerk. I'm just saying if you agree to go to work and then you don't, the guy fires you. That's how things work in the real world.
But going on strike is a different situation, particularly if you belong to a union.
I don't think it is. You
can't be fired if your union is on strike.
I don't think that they're allowed to go on strike, is my point. I think that they are not allowed to go on strike. I think that's the whole kerfuffle here, is that they're not allowed to strike. Just like air traffic controllers weren't allowed to strike. And Reagan said, well, you got to go to work or, you know, I'm going to get somebody else. And he went, no, we're going to strike. And Reagan said, okay. And then he just pressed the button, and the Monty Python foot came down and they were all replaced. It doesn't matter to me if people go on strike. I don't care. Strike all day. I don't mean to be snarky when I said that. I have no go on strike, don't go on strike, whatever. But the guy who owns the joint might just decide to replace you with somebody who's going to show up. That's all I'm saying. And it seems to me that that's how things operate. And I could be wrong, but I also don't know that they are allowed to strike under the terms of their employment. Okay. I think that might be a thing they're not allowed to do. Okay. You know, I don't really know.
Huh. Texas is poised to give college students and teachers the rights to carry guns on campus, reports the Associated Press. More than half of the state's House of Representatives have signed onto the measure, which permits concealed weapons at universities. The Senate, which backed a similar bill in 2009, is expected to support the House's legislation. Senator Jeff Wentworth of San Antonio said that at the moment, students are sitting ducks if someone opens fire at a classroom.
Uh-huh.
The only option now is to hide behind their desks or play dead, said a spokesman for Students for Concealed Carry on campus.
Wait a minute. So this is trying to get concealed carry so who can have guns, teachers or students?
Both.
Okay.
Both teachers and students.
Because you won't be a sitting duck if a teacher suddenly just decides he's had, let's say a teacher in Wisconsin who maybe is feeling a little little disgruntled about things, decides that he just wants to take out the trash.
Well, first of all, I don't think that the teacher...
What is the point of a concealed weapon if it's to deter crime?
Well, the idea is in the case that somebody goes on a shooting rampage on your campus, which, you know, happens all the time. Then you have a gun, like, under your jacket, so ostensibly you could whip it out and shoot the guy in the back of the head and
save
everyone.
Seems like you'd just want the guy to know you had a gun before anything happened.
Well, that may be part of the idea, too, is that if there's an awareness that students and teachers are allowed to carry, then it may deter a crazy guy from shooting everyone on campus.
I have no idea. I've never understood the whole concealed carry permit. It seems to me the concealed carry permits are for people who are really, really desperately wanting to shoot someone. Because they don't want to reveal that they have the gun at the last possible moment.
Well, it might just be that, you know, perhaps it makes people a little less nervous around you if they can't see that you have a gun on you. It also allows you to put it, like, say, in your backpack, in your purse, to carry it someplace that is not obvious.
So you'd have the option of carrying it openly or not. I want to just get a revealed carry permit, as I've mentioned before, so I can just sort of, and I'm just going to brandish it. Maybe brandish is too strong of a word. I'm just going to strap it to my chest and just carry it
everywhere. Well, didn't we cover that apparently in Oregon is legal to carry a gun openly, as long as you're not doing what they call brandishing. If you're not doing anything.
Not waving it around. Yeah. Got a guy, a listener, offered to, he's a gun safety instructor, offered to get me a I don't know what they call it, but an open carry permit.
Yeah.
Where I could just strap a gun to my thigh and just walk into a store and just say, I need some customers. Service over here right now.
Purely for the purpose of you being Richard Belzer for Halloween next year.
Yeah, that was the genesis of it. But now it appears that I'm saying that might be. Look, you want to talk about somebody who might be able to, an effective negotiator. Can't seem to get the boss to give you more health care. Walk into the meeting with a gun strapped to your bicep. Seems like that's probably going to speed things along a little bit. I'm just saying, if you really want to just
might send the wrong message though, don't you think?
Well, whatever. I'm all about bottom line results, Don. I'm all about whatever gets the job done.
Bahrain has called off the season opening Formula One Grand Prix car race.
Damn.
Because of political unrest. Ed Foster of Motorsports Magazine thinks it's the sensible thing to do.
I think no one should ever underestimate the power of what's going on in the country at the moment. And I think you've got to remember that Formula One should never come above any of these things. You know, it would look very, very strange if the race went ahead when there was still unrest in the country.
I don't even know where Bahrain is. Is Bahrain by Egypt?
Yes.
It's over there. It's in the Mideast, isn't
it? Yes, it's in the Middle East.
When they say the Mideast, what is it in the middle of?
That would be like Kansas. You're thinking Middle East. The Mideast and the Midwest are in the United States.
Is there a Mideast in the United States?
Sure.
Okay. I mean, what is it in the middle of? And don't say the East. I mean, what does that really mean?
I don't know.
When they say the Middle East, I never understand. Like, where does the East stop? Like, at some point...
When we get to New York?
Is there... But, I mean, is it like a time zone thing?
Oh, wait, that's going west. When you get to California, the East stops.
Well, or it doesn't. I'm just saying it seems like a really arbitrary distinction. I wonder...
Yeah. Well, it's also very... It's like using the phrase Oriental.
Yes.
It's very Eurocentric, because basically by referring to that as the Middle East, you're referring to it as east of us.
Well, right.
You know, again, implying that we are the center of everything.
Well, let's be honest. If you live in Europe, you are the center of everything. Every man is the center. Every man is the star of his own film, Don. Everybody is the everybody carries their own existence around their head.
But that's why Asians don't like the term Oriental, because Oriental means to the left. And that's basically what we were saying, is like they were over there to the left of us, you know, the people that count.
Well, you know, what if we gave them their own term, for us, for the people to the right of them, and then everybody be happy?
There probably is one, and we just don't know it because we would beat them up if they said it in front of us.
You know, we're better than the Sioux Indians who had where they just carried the Sioux Nation around with them. In their heads, as a collective state of consciousness. So wherever they went, Like, if they just went on vacation to, like, Australia, guess what? That was suddenly the Sioux Nation, because they were there.
Well, that's kind of the case if you're an American now.
That's right,
Don. I mean, everywhere you go, there's Starbucks and McDonald's and KFC.
You know why? Because we get to carry guns, so we can just enforce that. Anybody has a problem with that, they can take it up with somebody else.
Well, do you want to hear what else Ed Foster of Motorsports Magazine has to say about the Grand Prix?
Sure.
He says the event may be held later this year.
I think everyone will take into account what has been happening and is still happening in the country. I've heard rumours that they are going to reschedule the race for the end of the season after the last existing race, which I think will go to some way to restoring sort of people's faith in the country who can hold a Formula One race.
And so, which race is this exactly?
This is the Formula One Grand Prix auto race. We just started auto racing season this weekend, apparently. I saw people on...
Because there's the Daytona thing that happened.
Yeah, there was some NASCAR thing this weekend, and people were going, woohoo, car racing season.
We've
and I was like, really?
We've got sound on that, actually. We've got sound on Daytona coming up.
No good. Well, we'll.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, science on the march in just a few. Don't forget, next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program broadcast to 147 countries and to all free peoples everywhere. That is coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Today, Hick Watch, another show where we just got a whole bunch of crap going on. Hick Watch, Taser Watch, Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. He's got some Nintendo happenings for us, believe it or not. We've also got Mr. Ryan White from The Oregonian, music editor from The Oregonian. He's going to be joining us in the studio. We got clue number one for this week's Name That Snack contest from EH Vending. That is clue number one. And a little bit of Nathan Fillion news that was just handed to me by
Nathan
you.
Nathan Fillion news?
I printed it out, you handed it to me. So it really was just handed to me. It was like 20 minutes ago, but it's right here. So I got a little bit of... Little Fillion-oriented information that we're going to get.
I'll bet Cheryl's all a flutter.
Yes, she is. Never mind. Yes, and here's Don Taylor.
Former staff members for U.S. Congressman David Wu have started speaking out about why they left. Key members of Wu's staff wanted him to get psychiatric help just days before the November 2010 election. Since the election, six staff members of and most of Wu's political team have resigned. Staffers who walked away said Representative Wu made bizarre statements to them and his constituents. They also claim he wouldn't listen when they tried to get him to talk to a psychiatrist. Political analyst Ben Bergstein said the staffer's message was clear. They are feeling a sense that, wait a minute, my reputation's on the line too, and I'm not going down with the ship.
Okay.
Wu's behavior had raised eyebrows in the past. For example, during a floor speech a few years ago, Wu referred to the people in the White House as Klingons. More recently, a Wu supporter formally complained about the tone of a campaign speech. He also caused a bit of a ruckus at Portland International Airport by moving into a secure area without being screened. In a statement released last Friday, he said he was dealing with the death of his father and a divorce. He went on to say, I fully acknowledge I could have dealt with these difficult circumstances better, and I remain focused on being a good father to my children and a strong representative for the people of Oregon. When the Willamette Week has reported, by the way, that they shared a photograph of David Wu in a fuzzy tiger suit. And the story that they shared about the fuzzy tiger suit is completely nuts, frankly. It's basically that he was warned back on Halloween by his staffers that perhaps it would be best if he didn't wear anything for Halloween that would be potentially embarrassing.
Right.
He was going to a party. And later he sent some staff members a photo via his phone of himself at home wearing a furry tiger suit. There was no text, just a picture of him.
Hey, look at me.
In a tiger suit.
I'm a tiger.
Shortly after that message with the subject line, not funny, appeared in the inboxes of several Wu staffers, it appeared to have been written by Wu's middle school age daughter because it had her name at the end and was written somewhat childishly. But staffers have suggested it was actually written by Wu pretending to be his daughter. It said, you're the best. My dad made me say that, even though you threatened to shut down his campaign. A little later, staffers received another email with a similar you're the best message. This one signed by Wu's son. It also had a different photo of Wu in the tiger suit, sprawled face down on the bed with his son above him, looking like he was like trying to wake him up. And a third email was sent later, and the subject line was wasted. It was also signed by Wu's son, and it said, my dad said you said he was wasted Wednesday night after just three sips of wine. It's just that he hasn't had a drink since July 1st. Cut him some slack, man. What he does when he's wasted is send emails, not harass people he works with. He works so hard for you. Cut the dude some slack. Just kidding.
This is awesome. How old are the kids? Do we know?
I'm really not sure.
Trying to figure out if that's a thing that that would likely come from the mouths of babes.
And then another email was sent to staffers a few minutes later that said, "My dad says you're the best because not even my mom put up with him. We think you're cool." And, of course,
fantastic.
There's the photo of David Wu in the tiger suit. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Apparently David Wu.
So he might be crazy.
May just be bat poop crazy.
That's wonderful. All right.
And
all the more reason just to keep him in office, like, forever.
Yeah.
You know, in these times of...
Yay, Oregon.
These times of economic and domestic toil and strife and turmoil, the people need to laugh, Don. People need entertainment now more than ever. Really, if not now, when? If not him, who? I ask.
David Wu, closet furry.
I'm just saying it's, to provide a little bit of a diversion, to put a smile on the face of the people. It's not just bread and circuses. Sometimes you need bread and circuses and a guy in a tiger suit.
A man and a woman from Seattle are among the four Americans hijacked by Somali pirates. Phyllis McKay, 59, and Bob Riggle, 67, were on board the yacht SV Quest with its owners, Gene and Scott Adam of California.
I hate to interrupt this. Did you read the story about these guys this weekend? When this story first started coming out? It was like it was written just so we would hate them. Everything in the story seemed to be designed just so I would loathe them and root for their eventual falling at the hands of pirates.
Yeah, they're just a whole bunch of rich bastards that were on a yacht.
Been sailing around the world in a yacht for like 6 years through, quote, pirate-infested waters, which isn't really a thing you think that you're ever going to be sailing through. I mean, the article that I read, it was on, I think it was from Reuters, but it was on Yahoo News or something. I mean, it stopped just short of saying, like, and they were asking for it repeatedly, and finally they were given it.
Yeah, this was a cruising expedition organized by Blue Water Rallies Limited. In a statement, Blue Water Rallies said they were very distressed to learn of the hijacking of SV Quest on 18 February. Scott and Gene Adam joined the Oz Med section of the Blue Water Rally just before Christmas and had been sailing with the rally from Phuket as far as Mumbai. Quest had taken on board two well-known rally participants, Phyllis McKay and Bob Riggle. However, she chose to take an independent route from Mumbai to Salalah.
She went off the path.
Leaving the rally on February 15th.
Don't ever go off the path.
Never go off the path.
You go off the path, bad things happen to you.
Yeah, apparently they won't get any money from them if they try to, like, use them for hostages or something. So
it was when you say they left the rally... What is a rally in this case? Is it like the gumball rally?
I believe what it is that a whole bunch of rich bastards who own yachts can get together and then like should sail their yachts together on a specified route. And then I'm assuming like, you know, drink expensive wines and talk about how rich they are when they get into port.
Okay.
Yeah, the U.S. military is monitoring the situation.
I'm sure they're looking into it real. I'm sure they have tons of men on the job right now.
They're rich white people, of course they are.
I mean, it just seems like this is the sort of thing that this is called tempting fate. I'm not saying they were asking for it as such, but it does seem like the longer you
like those kids backpacking through Iraq or wherever they were.
Well, yeah, seriously. I mean, it's like the longer you just sort of. You know, sail around in international waters basically waving a big flag that says, hi, I've got lots of money and shiny things with me. It seems like the more likely you are that somebody's going to come out of the woodwork or decides to do something about that.
If they could only have made it to Mumbai, where they would have been surrounded by other rich bastards.
Yeah.
And they would have been safe.
I suppose.
Would
that that were true, Don. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we got your entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com.
Let's do some science.
Here's your science on the march for Monday, February 21st, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609.
Discovery's astronauts are back at Kennedy Space Center for a launch attempt. Good weather is forecast. Now all NASA needs this week is a smooth countdown all the way to zero. NASA's countdown clocks will start ticking Monday afternoon. Liftoff is scheduled for 4:50 p.m. on Thursday. Discovery should have taken off on its final voyage in November, but fuel tank cracks kept the shuttle grounded for 4 months. The shuttle had to be returned to its hangar for the unprecedented repair work. After returning from the International Space Station, Discovery will be retired and sent to a museum. Its final destination is expected to be the Smithsonian Institution.
You know what? Here's what they ought to do to fix this stupid, broken economy. Why don't they have a lottery where the prize is going on the space shuttle or the space station?
I don't know.
And, like, you got to meet health requirements and, you know, whatever. And, like, you can't just be some guy with a bad ticker or whatever. But it'd be, like, $100 or something, or 10 or whatever. Whatever they determine. And then it's, like, if you win and you meet all the qualifications, you get to go in the space shuttle. I'd put in like, $50 for that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people
would. And that would help pay for all of the cracks and the things that they have to tape back up.
And it's, like, they're sending people up there anyway. So instead of, like, 7 guys from NASA or 9 or whatever, you send up one less. And then there's just some guy from... some guy from Kalamazoo who wins, and he goes up. Hooray.
The Right Stuff was on TV this weekend, and I watched a little of it again.
It's a great movie.
It's a great movie. And by complete coincidence, I started reading the book World Without Us.
Yeah.
And they had an anecdote in there about John Glenn when he was going up on the very first space mission, and they strapped him in, and apparently he looked up and he said, "Oh, my God, I'm sitting on a pile of low bids."
Yeah. Yeah, first of all, that's a great book. Also, The Right Stuff is one of those movies that I will watch anytime. Like, if I'm flipping around and I just land on it, it's halfway through, I'll sit and watch it from that point. It's like with Any Given Sunday and Goodfellas are two other movies for some reason that I do that with. It doesn't matter if I'm 10 minutes in or if it's like 2.5 hours in. I will watch from whatever point that is until the end of the film. The Right Stuff, the book, is actually one of those books that's it's on a sort of slow rotation, like Halley's Comet in my library, in that I don't want to read it too often because it's so freaking wonderful. It's such an amazing book that I don't want to burn out on it. So, I don't know, I'm going to give it probably... I was actually just reorganizing my library at home and moving some of the stuff to the basement of my house. But I saw The Right Stuff, and I think I'm going to read it again in probably, I don't know, 6-7 months. Because if you have never read The Right Stuff by Tom Wolfe, it really is just an exceptional book. And it holds up after all these years.
It really does.
He was very much a pioneer of the new journalism and sort of writing true life as fiction, not unlike Truman Capote and Hunter Thompson, but in his own sort of way. It really is just an amazing book. And if you love the movie The Right Stuff, as great as The Right Stuff movie is, as great as that is as a film, it just scratches the surface. I mean, it really... You know, it's like a tenth of what he's able to cover in the book, and it is just exceptional. So I can't recommend that highly enough.
As an algae with a gross nickname invades pristine trout streams across the U.S., Maryland is about to become the first state to enforce a ban on a type of foot gear the organism uses to hitchhike from stream to stream, felt-soled fishing boots. The State Department of Natural Resources plans to prohibit wading with felt soles starting March 21st to curb the spread of invasive organisms that can get trapped in the damp fibers and carried from one body of water to another. Similar bans will take effect April 1st in Vermont and next year in Alaska, aimed especially at Didymo, a type of algae that coats riverbeds with thick mats of yellow-brown vegetation, commonly called rock snot.
Really?
Yes.
When you say commonly called rock snot, is that by... the guys who work in the lab? Is that by the journalist who's trying to get you to say that publicly because he has some sort of money?
I think it's probably like fishermen and ecologists and all the people that spend a lot of time in the rivers and have to actually deal with it.
Okay.
They call it rock snot. Maryland fishery regulators say Didymo, short for Didymosphenia geminata, can smother aquatic insect larvae such as mayflies, stoneflies, and caddisflies that are favored food for trout.
Didymo sounds like you're answering some sort of a lunch request in a southern dialect.
Didymo.
Yeah.
I just want to say that all the time. Didymo. Whenever I don't know what to say,
sort of
I think that's what I'm going to say.
Like, what meal are you eating right now?
Didymo.
Or, yeah.
Or it would be just a very delicious candy bar.
You know, or Ted isn't around. He was
would
here
like
the other...
Didymo?
He was here, now he's gone. Where he at? He at Didymo. You go, okay, I'll wait, I guess. Okay.
Or it's an even more tortury prison camp than Gitmo.
Seriously, that's where you go afterward. It's for the undead.
Anyway, this isn't a stream killer like acid mine drainage. Fish have adapted where it first appeared, but biologists can't say they don't know for sure how it will affect the ecology in Maryland waterways. They figured out, though, that it hitchhikes from waterway to waterway in felt-soled wading boots. So if you fish there, you're not going to be allowed to have felt-soled wading boots anymore.
What do you mean?
The bacteria itself can actually soak into the felt in the felt-soled boots. And then if you wear them in one river where there's rock nut, then you wear them like a month later, you wear them something else.
Got it. Because just for a second there, it sounded like it had its own wardrobe that it was dressing in felt-soled wading boots, you know, and maybe, you know, and it was maybe putting on a brooch of some kind and getting a parasol and going out for a stroll.
A jaunty fedora.
On to the other. Perhaps. Here I am out on the town.
It's me, Didymo.
With a watch fob and just sort of twirling it merrily and spat as it walked down the street.
He looks a little like Kanye West, really, but he's just an enormous bacteria.
Okay.
Oil from the BP spill remains stuck on the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico, according to a top scientist video, and slides that she say demonstrates the oil isn't degrading as hoped and has decimated life on parts of the seafloor. This report is at odds with a recent report by the BP spill compensation czar that said nearly all will be well by 2012.
Really? Is that, did they actually say all will be well?
Apparently, yes. The people at BP...
Stay in your homes!
The guy who actually works for BP said that everything's going to be fine.
It's just the phrase, all will be well.
All will be well.
It just sounds very...
Also, he's the compensation czar.
I was just going to say, it sounds very Maoist. It sounds very marching through Red Square.
Well, marine scientist Samantha Joy of the University of Georgia went to places she had visited early in the summer and expected the oil and residue from the microbes would be gone by then, by the time she got there in December, and darned if it wasn't gone. There's some sort of bottleneck we've yet to identify for why this stuff doesn't seem to be degrading, she said.
So it's really that all is well. It's not even that all is going to be well. It's that all is well.
Yes. Yeah. The microbes did a good job. They consumed maybe 10% of the total discharge, but the rest of it doesn't actually seem to be going anywhere.
Okay.
And is killing animals on the bottom. There's lots of dead crabs.
Wait a
and
minute.
Starfish
okay.
and
now,
stuff.
Okay, now I'm totally confused here. So what doesn't seem to be going anywhere?
The oil that sunk to the bottom of the ocean that ostensibly the magical microbes are supposed to be eating up and degrading, and there should be like a serious... dent should have been made in it by December, and there wasn't.
Okay, so then who was saying that all will be well?
The guy in charge of paying out compensation for BP.
Oh, I see. Okay, so this is too... Okay, so this is... Maybe he might not be entirely forthcoming about the reality of the situation. Okay.
He might be putting a falsely cheerful face on it.
Okay. Because when you said it didn't seem to be degrading, that sounded good for a second.
Oh.
I was like, oh, it doesn't, you know, because degrading is getting worse. Well, your grandmother's condition is degrading rapidly. And you think, well, that sucks. I don't want it to degrade. And you said it doesn't seem to be degrading. And I thought, it's not even that all will be well. We are apparently in Wellville. We are there now. Everything has been solved. The problem is fixed.
No, the special microbes are supposed to be eating it up and getting rid of it, and apparently they've only gotten rid of about 10% of it, and there's a whole lot of dead critters on the bottom of the ocean covered in slime.
All right, then.
Hooray! That's all the science.
There you go. There's your science on the march. Brought to you by Squires Electric. Thank you for coming by and enjoying this fine program today. Made possible by, of course, your patronage and the patronage of Squires Electric. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. When it comes to wires or wiring in your home or business, whether it is wiring for your broadband, wiring for your electricity, whether it's wiring for your intercom system, whether it is wiring for the inside of your walls or inside the room into which you are plugging your various items of technology in the future and communication and so forth. Doesn't matter. If you've got some sort of an issue, whether it comes to whether it's the repairing, the installing, if it's upgrading, if it's updating, or just making sure you pass an inspection, you can make sure that you do it and do it the first time and do it effectively and efficiently. And it's 503-252-1609 for Squires Electric or squireselectric.com. They've been in Portland for going on 13 years, and they are longtime supporters and listeners to the Rick Emerson Show and to Legion of News. Been with us since very nearly the beginning, so you can support them in turn by going to squireselectric.com. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Scappoose police are looking for a man they say tried to kidnap a young boy. The boy told officers he was walking to Otto Peterson's school near Southeast 3rd and Steinfeld Streets just after 8 a.m. Friday when a man drove up in a pickup truck. Police say the man told the boy to get in the truck, but the boy kept walking. When he reached the school, the boy told staff members what happened, and they called police. Police say the man in the truck was white and in his 20s. The truck is described as a newer model and navy blue in color with a canopy and knobby tires. What are knobby tires?
Knobby tires are sort of like off-road tires, I believe. They're like the tires you would have on the playground, the kind that were all buried, you know, half deep in the dirt.
Anyone who spots a similar truck is asked to get the license plate number and call police.
I'm sure that the owners of all the similar trucks appreciate that.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you see a navy blue truck with a canopy, write that down.
Not even the exact truck. Just if it bears any sort of vague passing resemblance.
They're also asking parents to talk to their children about strangers. Of course, it seems to me that, you know, the kid pretty much did what he was supposed to do. He said, no, thank you, and kept walking.
Somebody is making an observation about the oil-eating microbes. Says, how much freaking oil do you think those damn microbes can eat anyway? I keep picturing them laying around with big, fat microbe bellies like Templeton the Rat saying, no, no, I can't eat any more oil.
That's awesome.
I have a happy news story.
I'm all stuffed over here. I couldn't possibly eat another bite.
Come on, it's wafer thin.
All right. I'm sorry, what are we doing?
We're doing a happy
what
news story.
What sort of happiness is this?
A dog story. All right. So we have a happy dog story.
There's Don Taylor with your happy dog news.
A 2-year-old dog that disappeared near Sacramento, California, and turned up days later in Tacoma, Washington, was reunited with his owner on Saturday.
Please tell me that the owner doesn't live in Tacoma.
I don't think so.
Okay, because that would not be happiness of any kind. If they were on vacation or if they were just out, you know, on the highways and byways of this fine nation, and then the dog went back home only to, only to realize that he'd returned to Tacoma.
Well, maybe he wanted to live in Tacoma. He's a dog.
No,
he doesn't know any better.
Look, even the dogs know better.
A woman found the 20-pound Patterdale Terrier named Bear and turned him in Thursday to the Humane Society for Tacoma and Pierce County. Owner Brian Raposo said he didn't think he'd ever see his dog again after Bear disappeared Tuesday afternoon. Humane Society Director Kathleen Olson said the agency was able to scan Bear's microchip and track down his owner. She said Bear probably traveled the distance in somebody's vehicle. Raposo left his home near Sacramento, California Friday to make the 13-hour drive to pick up his dog.
All right.
So the dog gets to leave Tacoma and go back to Sacramento.
So wait a minute. So the dog left where?
His dog disappeared in Sacramento and somehow ended up several days later in Tacoma.
So they think, okay, so they're guessing that it was picked up or that it was...
somebody had to drive it.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was hoofing it all the way from Sacramento to Tacoma. Because, I mean, that would be impressive, but also it seems to me impossible without some sort of an interstellar portal.
Yeah, not in just a few days.
Yeah, all right.
So maybe he just said to some guys, like, I've never seen Washington.
Take
put out a paw.
Take me to the shining jewel of the Northwest, won't you please?
He was, he jumped into a van with some guys following fish.
I wish to see the fresh green breast of the Inland Empire. Where will you take me? And they said, we're going to Tacoma.
A dog, so he doesn't know any better.
Yeah, you know who knows better is Rick Emerson. And here's the proof of that I'm not going to be accompanying my wife to Tacoma when she goes there later on this week. So she's going to be spending two glorious days and one glorious night in Tacoma for reasons that really elude me. I mean, frankly, I mean, of all the places you could go, I mean, she's like 5 or 6 days off of work or something. And it's like, why would you possibly take 2.5 days? Not just like a vacation, but of your life. Days that you will never get back and then spend them in Tacoma.
Maybe if she spends like a couple of days in Tacoma, it makes coming home to you that much sweeter.
It's like swinging a few bats in the on-deck circle.
Right.
All right. No, I got it.
Everything is easier spending several days in Tacoma.
It's like just hitting yourself in the feet with a ball-peen hammer. You know, once you stop, it just feels fantastic.
She comes home and you're sitting there on the couch.
Not smoking crack.
Spraying cheese onto Triscuits and nattering about Charlotte Ray. And she says, you know, this is still better than Tacoma.
Well, I mean, look, if that's what it takes, then I guess I'm willing to do that. Rick Emerson's willing to make that sacrifice. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Surgeons in southern China successfully removed a rusty 4-inch knife from the skull of a man who said it had been stuck in there for 4 years. Li Fuyan, 30, had been suffering from severe headaches, bad breath, and breathing difficulties, but never knew the cause of his discomfort. Li told doctors he had been stabbed in the lower right jaw by a robber 4 years ago, and the blade broke off inside his head without anyone realizing
it. Now, I was about to say that he was trying to, you know, pull the carpet over everybody's eyes by trying to blame the bad breath on the knife, but it was stuck into his jaw. It seems like that's going to be one of your hard-to-clean areas.
Yes.
There's no water pick that's going to take care of that for you.
No. And you do have oxygen in your blood and everything, so it is going to continue. It is going to rust and corrode.
You think of it, flossing around your incisors is difficult. Flossing down into a knife hole has got to be, I mean, a factor of 10.
Surgeons worked cautiously to remove the badly corroded blade without shattering it. The hospital's website reported successful surgery. The case, which one of the doctors described as a miracle, had been quietly covered in Chinese media and discussed on the internet. Zhu Wen, deputy director of the hospital's stomatology department, said, We checked his mouth, but no wound or scar had been found. It's very strange as to how the blade got into his head. So apparently, they gave him pain injections in his head and his ears and pulled it out.
They gave him pain injections?
Pain injections, it says.
Okay. Sounds like the pain injection happened 4 years ago.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Pain injection seems like one of those things that, that's one of those things that Rob Halford sings about or something, like in a shrieking sort of banshee tone.
It does have kind of a...
Give you my pain injection!
Okay, I was going to say a melancholy tone, but no, not so much when you sing it like that.
Yeah.
Strong winds took an inflatable jumping castle into the air Saturday afternoon, landing a 9-year-old girl on a rooftop. It happened at a home in the Vistas in Marana, Arizona, during a birthday party. The 9-year-old has serious head injuries, suffered when the castle traveled about 100 feet and landed 13 feet off the ground on a neighbor's roof. An 11-year-old girl was also injured when she fell to the ground, falling from the jumping castle as it rose in the air. Essentially took
Was there a talking dog? And did everybody have really big eyes? And was there a lot of, swirly harp music?
No.
I'm doing a Howl's Moving Castle,
Howl's
Falling Castle thing.
Gotcha.
I don't remember about it.
Wasn't.
Okay.
Not sure how it happened. It didn't say, it just said that it just, it said strong winds. It said it was tethered to the ground, and it appears that no one is at fault, but...
No, somebody's always at fault.
But this fella from the Northwest Fire Department said that if you're going to be using a bouncy castle, you should check the weather and take conditions into account. Essentially, if there's going to be strong winds, don't put your kid in a big inflatable cube.
That's probably good advice most of the time.
Yeah.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up here in just a skosh, as our Asian friends say. We have your entertainment news. Coming up next hour at Rick Emerson at rickemersonshow.com. It is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. Today featuring a Taser Watch, Hick Watch. Also, Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. And quite possibly, it may not in fact come to fruition, but quite possibly another installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made. It's just, I really don't know that we're going to. There's just so much to do.
I saw you typing furiously over there before the show.
So. I was just answering my many fan letters that the people come first on. Also, tomorrow on the Rick Emerson Show, we're going to be joined by Mr. Seth Aaron, winner of Project Runway Season 7. And here's the thing, and I got to say, we'll talk about it more next hour. I was going to make an observation about him because he was on Outlook Portland a few weeks ago. So he's going to be in the studio with us tomorrow, that is Tuesday, counting down a top five. Top five songs and or artists that he has playing, while he's sort of working and while he's creating. And later on this week, that will be Wednesday, we're going to have author Bill Carter in the studio with us as well. Here is Don Taylor.
Violent confrontations are escalating in Libya. The country's deputy ambassador to the UN, Ibrahim Debashi, is denouncing the actions of Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. During an impromptu press conference in New York, Debashi and a number of Libyan staff members tried to distance themselves from the regime.
Is this Libya 1?
It is.
After we have seen what is happening in Libya and after the kind of declaration of war against the Libyan people, which has been declared by the son of Gaddafi yesterday, find it is impossible to stay silent.
Gaddafi been very, very bad to me.
Debashi said he and his colleagues believe Colonel Gaddafi has declared war on the people and is preparing for genocide.
Really? When you say they believe that Colonel Gaddafi has... do you even need to finish the rest of the sentence to, that it's...
blah, 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 genocide.
Blah, 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 war against the people, blah, 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 under his iron boot, blah, 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 ground into a fine powder.
We put a few demands here. The first is to have the Colonel Gaddafi leave the country as soon as possible. We tell him clearly that if he is not getting out, the Libyan people will get rid of him.
He always seemed very reasonable before. We never saw this coming. That's probably not what he's saying.
No, I don't think he's saying that.
I only
caught
the first couple words, and then there was something at the end about Saskatchewan, and that was everything in the middle was just pops and buzzes.
A group of angry mourners offended when a news crew tried to get too close to a memorial service beat up two employees of a Sacramento television station on Sunday. The attack happened outside the Natoma's IHOP restaurant.
You don't really think of your mourners as being angry most of the time.
No, you think of them more
of a sorrowful kind of a...
Mourning sounds like a sad thing.
Yeah, usually they're easy pickings for just that reason, Don.
Well, two groups of young men got into a dispute Sunday inside the IPOP restaurant and took the fight outside. In the parking lot, someone pulled a gun, and the fight ended with a 27-year-old man dead.
I'm unclear about this. So this wasn't like at a church or at a funeral service?
Well, no, what had originally
happened... Is this at the IHOP afterward?
What had originally happened was... This is very poorly written. Originally, the incident was two groups of ruffians got into it at an IHOP and somebody shot somebody else. Friends of the victim assembled for a memorial service at the IHOP on Sunday afternoon.
Well, that seems like an ill-chosen location, first of all.
And so a crew from a Sacramento Fox affiliate decided to come down and film them.
Right.
And they got into a little bit of a scuffle with the mourners, who apparently did not appreciate the Fox affiliate coming down there and filming them while they were talking about their dead friend at the IHOP. A group of those mourners jumped the two-person news crew, reporter John Lobertini and photographer Rebecca Little, punching Lobertini in the face and dragging Little to the ground and kicking her in the face.
It's hard to imagine that this group ever would have encountered violence to begin with at the IHOP, because they seem like they're really thinking things through all the way.
Megan Saffold, a mourner who was at the scene of the scuffle but did not participate, said she did not agree with what happened, but emotions were already running high when the crew approached. She said, "It's just a respect issue. A lot of people, they're not in the right state of mind when you go through something like this. So, you know, all I say is, when someone asks you something, that you should respect it and respect their wishes."
Frankly, when you're at the IHOP, all bets are off. The IHOP in Sacramento, no
the
less.
The IHOP in Sacramento.
Jesus, God. I mean, you want to talk about just... It's like being... I don't know that it's the ninth circle of hell, but, I mean, it certainly seems like... It seems like one of the mile markers on the way to your ninth circle. It's not like it's in Bakersfield, but let's be honest. Like it's too many steps above that.
Sacramento is the Tacoma of California.
It really is. I was a big fan for many, many years of the Don and Mike show. And so Don Geronimo retired, and Mike O'Mara and the rest of those guys kind of went on with the Mike O'Mara show, which is essentially everybody been Don. Don had initially retired from radio and then decided he wanted to kind of get back into the game on some low-level basis. So he is actually now... The thing about the Don and Mike show, I have no real point here except to say that the thing about the Don and Mike show is they were always... There was this whole, like, huge in Japan thing with them and Sacramento. They were always... Like, you'd look at the Don and Mike show and their ratings would always be huge in D.C., which is where they were from, you know, D.C. and the surrounding, like, Arlington and the surrounding areas. And they were huge in Spokane. And then they were huge in Sacramento. Like, in Sacramento, they would have... I mean, it would just be like a 19 share, which is unheard of. Like, no one gets that. And so, of course, now that Don Geronimo is back in the radio, first place he just went to the radio station in Sacramento, and he just kind of went, "Don Geronimo, you're going to hire me now." And they went, "Yes, we are." And they just backed a truck up to his house. And so now he just sits at the radio station in Sacramento and does his show there every day. And the funny thing about Sacramento is how even people in Sacramento have no illusions about it. Mm. I mean, everybody there, they just sort of, they know the deal. You just wake up and every day you look around and go, "God damn, here I am in effing Sacramento again." You know?
Yeah.
But it's like they have sort of a whistling past their graveyard, you know, sort of a gallows humor about it. And I think they know that really when you live in Sacramento, all you can do is laugh. And occasionally beat a guy's ass at an IHOP.
Apparently.
Give a guy what for.
Washington State Police arrested Christina McDonald, 32, after they said she tried to elude officers in a car chase Saturday night. Troopers said they stopped the woman driving a white Chevrolet truck about 9:30 p.m. on Interstate 84 near milepost 13 for several traffic violations. McDonald was a passenger when troopers stopped the truck. While troopers were talking to the driver outside the truck, McDonald moved into the driver's seat and drove away. Oregon State Police followed and attempted to stop the truck. McDonald then drove north on Interstate 205 into Washington. OSP stopped their chase and Washington State Police took over. WSP stopped McDonald and arrested her on multiple charges. McDonald is charged with felony attempt to elude in a vehicle, unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, reckless driving, furnishing false information to the police, identity theft, and offensive littering.
Jesus.
She was cited to appear in Multnomah County Circuit Court.
Okay.
Offensive littering. On top of everything else.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at RickEmersonShow.com. Today, Hick Watch, Taser Watch, Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek, and Mr. Ryan White of The Oregonian, talking about all things musical.
Let's do entertainment.
There's your entertainment news. Did I mention that we'll have some Nathan Fillion news next hour as well?
I heard that.
Very exciting.
Is he going to be here? Is he coming here? Is he going to sit in that chair?
Well, I'm sure that I wouldn't tell you in advance if that was going to be the case. got to spring that kind of surprise on people.
By the way, I got a. We had talked, I believe, in this segment about the Arnold Schwarzenegger statue.
Or was yes.
And I did get an email from listener Megan, who said she is from Lewiston, Idaho. So the story piqued her interest. According to the local paper in Lewiston, Schwarzenegger was there to give the go-ahead to have the statue bronzed and shipped to Austria to be placed outside his childhood home. So that was the whole thing about the Schwarzenegger statue.
But what is the Lewiston connection?
That's where it's being made.
Oh, so they're just it's just like that. They got the gig. They got the bid.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So somebody in Austria. Austrians don't really seem to have a problem getting things done on their own, or recruiting people to do their work for them, often for free. So I don't know why they had to. It's strange that they had to go all the way to Lewiston, Idaho, to find a company that would make a Schwarzenegger statue. You'd think in Austria people would be falling all over themselves to do that.
You'd think.
Because he's like their favorite son. And one hasn't engaged in genocide.
Maybe Lewiston, Idaho is like the bronze statue capital of the world or something, and we're unaware of it.
Okay.
Also, Megan writes, P.S., just so you know, my boyfriend and I refer to the Rick Emerson Show as the Rick and Dawn Show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. That's nice.
According to The Hollywood Reporter, the American Idol alum David Archuleta has lost his home at Jive Records, his label since 2008. The season 7 finalist made a poor showing with his recent album, 2010's The Other Side of Down, which only sold 67,000 copies. The No Doubt guitarist Tom Dumont tweeted on Saturday morning that he and his wife had a third child, Koa Thomas Dumont.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was all gracious just now about the Rick and Dawn Show?
I know. See? That was very gracious of you.
Rick Emerson can play nice with others.
I know. Right. It shows what a big man you are.
You know where David Archuleta is huge? He's huge in
Sacramento?
Salt Lake. Oh. No, he's huge in Salt Lake. I forget if he's actually from Utah, but he's one of the faith. And so they just, when I was...
He is a creepy little bastard. I was still watching American Idol at that point.
And Ken Jennings creepy.
Yeah, he is just a creepy, and he has huge nostrils.
Yeah, he does. It's like when I was, I was there right as he was coming down to him and whoever. Who was the guy that was not David Archuleta that won?
Was that Chris Doughty? Was that
No, that was a couple years before that.
I can never remember who wins and
but
who doesn't.
But there was David Archuleta, and then there was like not David Archuleta,
right,
who ended up winning. And I had the misfortune to be in Provo, A, but then also B, to be in Provo when it was actually like coming out. And it was like you just couldn't go, you could not go anywhere. I mean, it was one of those. It's one of those things where it's like the tiny town gets the tiny thing that they can have some tiny pride over, and they just go like berserk with it. And nobody has a disproportionate response to things like that like a small, unimportant town. And that is just where just everywhere you went, it was like walking.
You know, they already have like the Osmonds and everything. Can't they just still coast on that?
And also, hello, a prophet.
Yeah.
It seems like once you have a prophet, you're being piggish if you ask for anything else.
A multi-billion-dollar religion.
That's right.
The second largest religion in the world or something like that.
And let's not forget the New Skin Company, Don.
David Cook was
David
the
Cook.
Winner.
All right.
He was the guy with the bad combed-down haircut.
I was never going to remember that, ever.
No. Right. NASCAR, which we mentioned earlier, begins its 2011 season today with its biggest race, the Daytona 500. Jimmie Johnson has won the last 5 NASCAR Sprint Cup championships, which is the most dominant stretch in the history of the sport. He says his success is a result of his passion for racing.
I'm doing something I love.
Sorry, he's so passionate, I have to turn off all the other sounds so we can hear him.
I'm doing something I love.
What's that passion?
I've been very fortunate to have my hobby as a kid turn into my career, and so there's that passion that's associated with it.
Jimmie Johnson.
Former driver Kyle Petty believes he should be getting a lot more credit.
When I say a great driver, that's an understatement. He's probably one of the greatest drivers that has sat in a stock car. And I think when you look back on it, he'll get a lot more credit for what he's done than he's getting right now.
By the way, I should say that I have a kind of a soft spot for Kyle Petty because I was... When I was a younger man, when I was growing up, I was a bit of a race enthusiast, and I was a big fan of Richard Petty, who is Kyle Petty's dad, which makes me like 9 degrees removed from whoever it is that we're talking about here. Is it Jimmie Johnson?
Jimmie Johnson.
Is that who
I was actually hoping it was going to be Kyle Petty saying he believed Kyle Petty should be getting more credit.
Everyone ought to get down on their knees and hail me as their new prophet and savior.
I mean, Jimmie Johnson's good and all, don't get me wrong, but I'm Kyle Petty.
No female lamentations. What is up with that?
Singer Rufus Wainwright has announced the birth of his daughter on his website. Viva Catherine Wainwright Cohen.
I'm sorry. There must be something wrong with my think yeah. I got some static going on. It sounds like you said that Rufus Wainwright had a child.
Rufus Wainwright is a dad. Yes. Viva Catherine Wainwright Cohen was born February 2nd in Los Angeles. Two proud parents, Lorca Cohen, Rufus Wainwright, and deputy dad, Jorn Weisbrot. The post on the website, right?
I don't understand. Who? Let me...
I'm guessing...
What?
I'm guessing that Jorn Weisbrot is his partner.
Deputy... Oh, I see. Deputy dad. I see, because he's co-dad.
And so I believe that Lorca Cohen, by the way, is the daughter of Leonard Cohen. I think she was the one who had their baby for them.
Is she the daughter of Leonard Cohen? Because that would be awesome.
Yes.
Okay, but what's the other guy being the deputy dad? Was that Rufus's call, or was that just sort of a...
That's what the post on his actual...
Not co-dad.
No,
called not the other dad.
Deputy dad.
Not dad number two.
Deputy dad.
Not an additional deputy dad. Sort of dad, right. Like a junior dad.
He also dedicated a song lyric to his new daughter, writing, "Daddy number one would like to offer everyone a digital cigar and welcome the little lady in with a French phrase from his favorite folk song, A la Claire Fontaine." And then something in French. But yeah.
Boy, he is super gay. He is...
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty gay.
It's just like the gayest thing you can possibly... Which is fine.
He named his daughter Viva.
I'm just, you know... Have you seen that? What is that? Was it? It wasn't a thing where it was solely with Rufus Wainwright. I don't think. But did you see the thing that was like a? It was a, like a Judy Garland tribute concert. And he was at. It just sounds like the sort of thing that is so ludicrous that it couldn't possibly have actually existed. I don't think it was on Broadway. It was some off Broadway performance, and it was a whole tribute show to Judy Garland. And of course, there's Rufus Wainwright, and it was one of those things where you just expected the universe to collapse down into a single, like a single subatomic microatom. It was just so unbelievable. It came out, and I think he actually, I swear to God, I think he actually did wear red ruby slippers. So, there you go. Boy, him and his whole crazy family. I mean, the idea that there's like half Wainwright seed there and then half Cohen, because like the Wainwrights are all nuts. I mean, all of, like, Loudon Wainwright is nuts. His sister, what is his sister's name?
I don't remember it, but yeah. Yeah, they're all very talented.
I know, Pixley Wainwright or whatever, you know? And then, like, you couple that with Leonard Cohen, and that's just, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well. Good for him. Congratulations, Rufus. All right. Well, let's see. Where's the... there we go. There's your entertainment news for Monday, February 21st, 2011. That means it's time to draw a curtain down on this episode of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gale, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakawa. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes your way next hour. That is to say, just 15 minutes or so from now after a brief musical interlude. We'll have Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek, Hick Watch, Taser Watch, and more. More! Thank you for joining us. We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another installment of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Monday, won't you?